All right, welcome to Lecture 88 in this American History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today we're going to talk about the Cold War, but as is going to be now the norm, at the beginning of each class, we are going to do a facts practice. So everybody who's ready with Anger Facts Practice 2A, I'm going to go ahead and put the stopwatch on. If you are on the recordings, you are welcome to pause the recording now and to mimic our exercise for your benefit as well. So, on your mark, get set, go! Halfway point. Keep going, folks. All right, 1 minute to go. That's it, the 4 minute mark. Okay. Patrick's happy because he was successful in exactly 4 minutes on his. And if you couldn't finish, don't worry, right? Try to do it once a day as a practice. And then I'm quite sure that you will get faster and faster. And just as a hint, also, Patrick, for instance, is using an abbreviation for World War I and for World War II. And this is entirely acceptable. Okay, so if you're going to write WW Roman numeral 1, which is a capital I, or WW Roman numeral 2, right, two capital I's, that's fine, right? And that can let you kind of speed up the process. And so the main thing here is to remember the characters, the events, and the dates, and make sure that you remember those or memorize those and keep them with you. So that's the exercise. Okay, good. So now we will continue with the story. Is there a place with all the answers? Well, Jack, what answers do you not have?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, we've covered these anchor facts all year long, and then we have the new answers next to Lecture 80 as well. So my question is, what are you not sure of that you need the answers for?
The new stuff.
The new stuff. Oh, the new stuff. If you look at Lecture 80, you will see the answer key.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, and, you know, that's a good point, Jack. Also, we should make a point of discussing them as well, and we will. Today, I want to make sure that we get into this thing of the Cold War. So, next week, we'll spend a little bit more time discussing each of the milestones again as a reminder. But look at the Lecture 80 materials for the answer key for the new stuff. Okay. So, today we're going back to the Truman Doctrine, and you know what's coming, don't you? What's Mr. Powell's question going to be? Who knows Mr. Powell well enough by now, after 88 lectures, to know what my question is going to be? All right, Abby, you will ask the question of the rest of the class. Go ahead.
What is the doctrine?
Aha! Abby knows. Okay, Abby asked the question. Everybody else, time to answer. What is a doctrine? Look at all those hands shooting up. We have some tentative hands will go up. Jack and Wyatt thinking of maybe putting their hands up there. Okay. Rosetta, all right. I'm glad to see a few hands going up here. Let's work on it. Rosetta, what is it? What's a doctrine?
A doctrine is a recommendation.
Okay, that's a good start. We had the idea of a policy, right? Advocated, right? Which means recommended. So it's more than just a recommendation. Okay, so a little bit more. That's a good start. That's a good word to remember, but we need more. Okay, Wyatt, what else do we need there beyond just the thought of a recommendation?
I actually put my hand up since I actually wanted to ask a question.
Oh, my goodness.
What is a doctrine?
Okay, I see. Right, so that's what we're answering now. Dana, help us along here.
A recommendation about government.
Okay, we're getting closer. We're getting closer. This is like that game where it's like colder, colder, hotter, warmer, warmer. We're getting warmer. We have a recommendation about government. Okay, getting close. Jack, keep going.
Government.
Sorry?
A recommendation from government or religion.
Okay, I wouldn't use the word from there, or I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that. But, all right, let's give Nemo the last word, and then Mr. Powell will help put a bow on this. Nemo.
A recommendation to the policy of a government.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah, I would actually say a set of recommendations. Because if a person makes a single recommendation, then, you know, basically everybody in the universe would have a doctrine, right? So everybody that ever thought of something that the government should ever do would have a doctrine. So, no, it's got to be more than just a recommendation. So I would start with, in the definition, a set of recommended actions. And it has to do with actions. Okay, because the government, it's not just about, oh, what should we think about this? Or it's about the fact that a government does certain things. It acts. Okay? So a doctrine is a set of recommended actions for the government. And it usually comes from a president, the leader of that government, saying, this is what I recommend this government should do. I, as the leader, want us to do this. And so we have James Monroe, who made such a set of recommendations. We call that the Monroe Doctrine. And now we have the Truman Doctrine. Following World War II, a set of recommendations by President Truman about what the United States should do. And it had to do with this situation. So back to this map, which we worked on a little bit more yesterday. And I want you guys to be the teachers again and explain to anybody that you were to present this map to what it is that they should understand about it. Okay, so who's going to teach this map to the rest of the group here? Again, the details don't matter. It's the colors and the pattern of it, right? So, especially with Germany kind of split down the middle. Okay, Abby, teach us this map.
So, the blue parts are the allies of Great Britain and of France, and the red part are the allies of the temporary ally of the United States in World War II, which is now their enemy. And the white parts of the map are parts of Europe that are neutral.
Okay, pretty close. I think it's better to describe the blue parts as parts of Europe protected by the United States. Because we are talking about a policy, a doctrine of the American government, the Truman Doctrine, and it involves the protection of these countries in blue, okay? And it involved, the second part you did pretty well on, it involves protecting the countries in blue from this big bully in red, communist Russia, which had swallowed up these other countries and forced the people in those countries to have communism, a kind of government that is the complete opposite of freedom. A government where you do not have the right to your own life, but where you are forced to work and the government takes the product of your work and gives it to others. So, this is the new situation at the end of World War II. And notice that Germany was conquered by America on one side and conquered by the Soviet Union or Russia on the other side and split down the middle. And that was part of this situation. Okay, so what did the Truman Doctrine say about this situation? Nemo, go ahead.
That the Americans couldn't leave. They had to stay and protect Europe.
Okay, very good. That's the crucial thing. They couldn't leave. In other words, they couldn't return to, what was that word from at the end of World War I? When Americans said, oh, it's so painful to go and help the rest of the world because it results in so many deaths of Americans, and we want to go back to, there was a special phrase. Abby?
Normalcy,
right. There were, and Americans now were thinking, or President Truman was saying anyway, there's no way to go back to normalcy. Okay, we've got to stay and police this. So part of the reason why was just how terrible World War II had been. Even compared to World War I, it was as if people, and especially because of all the modern technology and modern weapons, wars were becoming worse and worse in the sense of more and more people were dying. And I just wanted to show you guys here a little bit about World War II. Part of what President Truman was thinking of, if you go and you look up World War II, what you will learn is that there were an estimated, look at this incredible number, 50 to 85 million deaths. And notice what it says here on this webpage. These made World War II the deadliest conflict in human history. Now, this number is so large that it is literally impossible to grasp, right? Which is a good thing, because I think if we could really know what this number means in a really personal way, I think it would make it impossible for us to ever be happy, because it would just be so hurtful to think of so many lives destroyed. So we are fortunate in a way that we don't have the ability to understand this number except as a math concept. But this was absolutely the worst ever. And this was part of what President Truman was thinking about. And part of it, truly the worst part, was that a part of this war included something called the Holocaust, which we discuss in European history. And it is the worst part of all, the worst thing that I can think of that's ever happened in history. And so where 11 people were killed as a part of the war, they were entirely innocent people, and they were mostly killed by their own government, by the German people. So did I say 11 million people? It says right there.
You said 11.
All right, sorry, 11 million. So, yeah, this is something we talk more about in European history. Yeah, and the target of the Holocaust were people who are Jewish in particular. And we will get back to that next week, because we're going to be talking about a country called Israel as well. So anyway, but reason why I wanted to show you guys this was that President Truman was thinking about, one of the things he was thinking about with the Truman Doctrine was 50 million dead. And if, for instance, the United States would just go away, and here we have this big bully communist Russia, and it's going to invade the rest of Europe, well, what's going to happen? This is going to continue to be the way that the world is, because, again, in a way, just like President Monroe said, the rest of the world is a little bit cuckoo. And they just keep fighting these horrible wars. And what do we do? So now President Truman is saying what we need to do is police the rest of the world. Stop them from doing this to each other constantly. And with all of these millions and millions of people getting killed, we don't want that anymore. And it's kind of easy to understand why people would feel that way, right? That this is so terrible. And if you have this powerful country now, a superpower, maybe you can protect the world from itself, was kind of what President Truman was thinking. So he announced the Truman Doctrine. And why don't we read the most important passage from the Truman Doctrine here? It's highlighted in blue. Does anybody who's a very confident reader here want to actually do a reading for us of parts of this? Dana, why don't you start us off with the first two paragraphs that are highlighted? Go ahead.
One way of life is based upon the will of the majority and is distinguished by free institutions, representative government, free elections, guarantees of individual liberty, freedom of speech and religion, and freedom from political oppression. The second way of life is based upon the will of a minority forcibly imposed upon the majority. It relies upon terror and oppression and controlled press and radio, fixed elections, and the suppression of personal freedoms.
Okay, what's he talking about here, guys? One way of life and a second way of life. What is this? Rosetta?
I'm not sure, but I think he might be talking about America in the first one, and then Russia.
In the second one, you're absolutely right. Two ways of life. A free way of life, with all of these different wonderful things, and then communism. And yeah, and isn't it strange that he didn't name it right here? But There's we might talk about that a little bit more. And so since there are these two ways of life, then Abby, read the last two paragraphs, please.
I believe that it must be the policy of the United States to support free peoples who are resisting attempted subjugation by armed minorities or by outside pressures. I believe that we must assist free peoples to work out their own destinies in their own way.
Okay. Here we have the key phrases of the Truman Doctrine. And Dana or Rosetta pointed out something maybe very interesting, that some of the words here are not entirely clear. And I think we're going to see that this is going to lead to some problems. So it would have been better to have words like Republic, if we could use it, but at this point in American history, we're kind of stuck with the word democracy, and then communism on the other side, to be clearer about it, and to be clearer about what it is that the United States is going to do. Because as we're going to see, this idea of free peoples is, well, if you don't understand clearly what freedom is, then this can get you in trouble if you decide you're going to help different kinds of free peoples. So we'll get to that. But what I wanted to say today about the Truman Doctrine is how it led to something called the Cold War. So we have this idea of two ways of life. On the one side, we have America that's trying to help people to be free in the world. And on the other side, we have Russia that is trying to conquer these other countries and force them to have communism. And we see that in Europe, we have this line that historians called, or that was called at the time, the Iron Curtain. Think of it as kind of like an iron fence, right? That was put up between the two sides. And in one way, that fence kind of protected people who were free. But the truth about the Iron Curtain was that it was put up by the red side to keep people in. And the most infamous part about the Iron Curtain was a place in Germany called the Berlin Wall. And here's a picture, for instance, of the Berlin Wall. And so what had happened was the city of Berlin was divided into two parts. The free part, which is where this photograph is being taken, and then the communist part on the other side. And what you can see was there was a really, really tall wall, and then there's a wide open space in between with lots of barriers. And inside of this open space, there were soldiers from the communist side that would police that and prevent people from the communist side from escaping to freedom. And so this was kind of the situation for the longest time. If you look up the Berlin Wall and you kind of look for images of it, the best images are of when the Berlin Wall was broken at the end of communism in Russia. And this is a wonderful picture because the people on the free side are jumping up on top of the wall and they are yelling at the soldiers who used to keep the people on the communist side trapped. And somebody spray painted the word freedom. And pretty soon, the wall started to come down. Here's an image of somebody who's taking a sledgehammer to the wall and they're starting to bust it. And pretty soon, there's some really great pictures, on the internet of here, some people, standing on top of the wall and it's been broken and everybody, in the eastern side is able to escape. But basically, what I want to talk about here with this idea of the Berlin Wall and about these two parts of Europe was that America was protecting the blue side and the Soviet Union was oppressing or ruling the red side. And this made for a very uncomfortable life along this line, as you can imagine, right? Along this Iron Curtain, along this divide, right? Because you have America that's protecting you, but on the other side of the line, you have a powerful government that wants to conquer you and force you to have communism. And at every moment of every day, you know that. And you know that if the Russian side decides that they can get away with it, they're going to try and come and conquer you. So this creates a very tense situation. It was a permanent situation. It was something that everybody lived with every day of their lives in Europe, pretty much around the world in a sense. Everybody lived with this situation, which is not the same as peace. Because peace would be a situation where you feel comfortable, where you feel like, oh, there isn't around the corner somebody who wants to attack you and hurt you, right? And you feel safe. Basically, it's pretty much what Americans feel every day when they wake up and get out of bed. And, you know, you don't feel like you are under threat in your life. You can go out and you can play in the park and you can go to the store and, you know, do all the things in regular life, and everybody's pretty much at peace. So that's a really lovely situation. But imagine if, you know, you were constantly worried that just around the corner there was somebody that would attack you, right? And the only thing that's keeping you safe is the fact that there's a policeman sitting outside of your front door all the time, protecting you. Now, that would not feel very peaceful, right? Imagine if that's kind of what your life was like, where there had to be a police car in front of your house in order to protect you every day. Now, we do have police cars that go through the neighborhood and, you know, that protect people, but they're not in front of your house every day, right? All the time when you're sleeping and protecting you every moment. That would not be very peaceful. Right? But this is what the situation was like for Europe in the Cold War. Basically, you have the United States with its powerful military over here on the blue side protecting everybody, but everybody worried that the red side is going to attack. And that's not peace. Now, it's not the same thing as being at war. Right? Because when you're at war, everybody's shooting. And people are dying. So, historians came up with a term to describe this situation. It's not peace, but it's also not what they call a hot war. And they get that term from, I guess they get that term from, you know, explosions and stuff and being really hot, fire, you know, that sort of kind of feeling. So a war where people are actually shooting, they call that a hot war. But a war where they're not actually shooting, but they are always aiming at each other. And always, both sides are always just about ready to start a war any moment. Historians say, well, that's not the same as peace, that's for sure. And so they have a term for that. It's called a cold war. A situation where the two sides are pretty much ready for war at a moment's notice. So what we're going to see is this situation of the Cold War is kind of what was created in part by the communist Russia and its desire to expand and conquer other countries, and the choice of the United States to follow the Truman Doctrine. The Truman Doctrine to police the world. And what we're going to get to next week is, here's a map, which is kind of a cool map, that shows you the entire country of communist Russia, which is really huge. I like this because it's like a globe, right? And it shows you the entire size of communist Russia. And what we're going to talk about next week is that, well, on the one hand, you have, you know, this part of the world that you need to protect, as the Truman Doctrine is about, right? Mostly is about protecting Europe from the Soviet Union. But it's not just about that, because as you can see, the Soviet Union was really huge. And there was quite a great fear of communism spreading to other countries. In fact, in 1949, after the war, communism became the kind of government in China, another huge and important country. And communism was threatening to take over Korea, which is the neighbor of China right here, right? And the United States had taken over and was now protecting Japan. The United States had taken over and was now protecting Germany and other countries over there. And so policing the world against communism was going to be a big challenge, because the Soviet Union was a really big country and communism seemed to be spreading in different directions. And of course, these two directions are not the only ones. What about spreading this way? And this way? Which was part of what the communist Russia planned to do. What is this part of the world called? Where Americans began to worry, communism would spread. Nemo?
The Middle East.
The Middle East, right, exactly. It's called that because the Europeans were going to the Far East, and this was in the middle. So it's known as the Middle East because it was the Europeans who kind of named it. So we call this geographically, most people call this the Middle East. And, well, this is going to be now the new problem that we're going to talk about as the last part of our story, is America's decision to police the Middle East and what all of the challenges were involved in that task and how that has led to modern history, including what we call the War on Terror. All right. We're getting very close now to the world that we see around us. And so we're getting very close to the end of the course here. So continue with the facts practice. We will do two-way one more time to give you that chance to beat your personal record on it. We'll move on to a new facts practice next week. So good luck with that. And, of course, tomorrow is History Through Art. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.